everybody, and welcome to the Fortress of Comic News, episode 213. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside the well-caffeinated Mike.
Always. Always well-caffeinated. Twice a day, actually, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Until Friday, I didn't realize that Jupiter's Legacy came out. I guess I thought it was coming out in July or something, but yeah.
So, first, everybody, special guest Dave Burr on the show this week.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. I had to get that out of the way. But yes, today on the show, we have co-publisher of Scout Comics and writer Mr. David Byrne. Awesome individual, really cool guy, and Scout Comics is doing a lot of cool stuff, so check out their website.
Now, my quick Jupiter's Legacy story before another story, but I literally went on Netflix Friday morning, and maybe this changed afterwards. I haven't been on Netflix since that day. But like, how Jupiter's Legacy wasn't the first thing I saw when I turned on Netflix is beyond me.
Right.
And the fact that I had to search it and it wasn't the first thing that popped up when I typed in Jupiter.
Yeah.
Is outrageous. Like, it was nuts. I had to actually go into the app, go under what's new, and search down a bar to find it. Like, it was day one of the show.
Like, Netflix, what is you doing?
Yeah.
But now, I woke up this morning and I go on Netflix and it's like number 10 in the U.S. I'm like, Netflix, you spit these numbers out of your ass. I know you are, because we must have talked about it last month that it was going to come out, but man, I completely forgot.
As somebody who listens to and follows a lot of comedians, I could tell you, nobody knows the numbers. Nobody.
Right.
Because they all tell you, you do a special and they pay you, a bunch of fucking money to do it. And that's why there's so many comedy specials on Netflix. And they never give them the back end numbers. They have no clue. Yeah.
They control it.
I got the check. So what do I need to know the numbers for?
Before we talk about Jupiter's Legacy, you got something?
I got something. I announced on Twitter that I'm co-hosting. Jude is the host, but I am doing a new show called Club Valiant over at IFLC.
Okay.
We're tasking ourselves with reading the entirety of the Valiant Comics line, starting with Robert Venditti's Volume 1 of Exo Manowar. So go check that out. Go check those guys out. But if you're not a video person, Fortress Comics has the podcast feed. So I'm going to launch it through this feed. So probably Wednesday, you guys are going to get the episode 0. And then when episode 1 comes out, you'll get episode 1. And then it'll have its own feed after that. So if you like it, you can check it out there. But yeah, I'm really excited about that show. So
when do you guys do Ninjak? Because that's the coolest one.
So we went through this because I have the whole list, but volume 2 of Exo Manowar is actually titled Enter Ninjak.
All right. That's what I needed to know.
So everybody know that I know nothing about Valiant other than I read this one volume when we interviewed Venditti, 2 years ago?
Yep.
And Ninjak doesn't have his own series for a while.
I don't know. As a kid, I loved Ninjak. They just have some interesting, let's be honest, that movie killed any hopes of Valiant making it to the big screen. Bloodshot, they did that character dirty. That's never happening.
And dude, when I did some research for this, as we're getting closer to doing episode 0, which we did last night, the current value line is littered with people that we love. Jeff Lemire, Colin Bunn, Robert Venditti, so on and so forth.
Yep.
If you go back to the original Valiant line, Joe Quesada was a part of it.
Yep.
Like, even the guys back then, like the top tier guys back then, were doing fucking Valiant stuff back then. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy that like so much great talent went through that place, and yeah. I know nothing about it.
Right. Yeah, you're making me want to read some of those books too. But I've been reading so many comics lately. It's crazy that I'm finally catching up on stuff. So.
Well, to anyone that does want to follow along, you can obviously if you want to support your local comic shop, buy it through them. But Comixology Unlimited has like almost all the Valiant stuff on there, so you can read it for quote unquote free if you're a Unlimited member.
Yep, and I'm probably going to jump back on that because it seems to be worth it. And speaking of jumping on it, let's get to the news.
Let's do it.
All the lack thereof. Loki is now launching 2 days earlier than previously announced, June 9th. I didn't look into that date specifically of why they did that, but June 9th is a Wednesday now instead of a Friday. So.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Okay, it's on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it's on New Comic Day. But that's cool. Loki 2 days earlier.
Yeah, I like the way they did it. They did like a thing on their YouTube, and then Tom Hiddleston just like pops up and be like, "Hey guys, we're gonna do it 2 days early now." And he leaves. And I was like, "Okay."
Yeah. He just made $20,000. all right, so you watch all of Jupiter's Legacy. I'm only on episode 3, so try not to spoil. I mean, I've read the comic series. I will say, first impressions, it's awesome. It's really good, which leads us back to the beginning of the episode of the podcast. We're very confused by how little it was marketed.
I could tear it apart a little bit where, like, yeah. You know, they got a youngish actor, probably a guy in his 30s or 40s,
mm-hmm.
to play a man who's 100 and something.
Right.
And that's a little wonky, but I get it. I get why they did it.
Yeah.
And I still think that all the actors did a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, I feel very disconnected from this, from like the most of, especially comics critics.
Yeah.
Because I fucking love this show.
Right.
I like the show better than I like the comic.
Yeah. So for anyone that doesn't know, the comic never incorporated like the flashback scenes. The comic was like Jupiter's Legacy of the real world shit, and then we got a whole comic series of the prequel. So this, like, integrating the, you know, the 1920s, or was it the 20s or 30s timeline with the actual real-time stuff, I think it's awesome. Like you said, it makes for really good storytelling.
Yeah, so all I'll say about the ending, because I'm sure a lot of people haven't finished it, but...
Right.
Is the ending kind of pissed me off a little bit, because the way it ends, it's obvious that they wanted more episodes. And what I mean by that is I wouldn't be surprised if like they've already filmed the second half of this.
Right.
And they just split them up.
Yeah. Yep.
The acting is phenomenal. My only critique of it is the first episode when they fight not Darkseid.
Yeah, Dark Star or Black Star,
which made me laugh because I was just like, "Oh, Millar beat DC to Darkseid."
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
but they did that scene, and that scene is what it is. It's not the best scene in the world, but it gets its point across, and it kind of sets this tone of like this superhero thing. But it's not really that show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show about the passing of the torch through generations. It's exactly what the comic was. Like,
right.
It was all about the second generation, them being raised by the greatest superheroes to ever live,
right.
And having to live up to that expectation. Mm. And that's what the show is. So a lot of the show, while they may be in tights, they're not fighting supervillains.
Right.
And that happens here and there, but it's not the bulk of the show. With that, I know some people have gone into it being like, I wanted punchy, punchy superhero stuff, and were disappointed. And I think that's a lot of the negative criticism I'm seeing.
I see.
But for me, it hit all the right notes. It hit everything perfectly. I love the acting. Like, some of the wigs are weird, but, you know, throw that to the side.
Dude, I don't care. I got through the first three seasons of Arrow. Like, wigs don't bother me anymore.
Yeah. I loved everything about it. Like, the characters are so spot on. They introduce some characters later on that are just amazing. Yep. And the big twist at the end is, although I knew it was coming because I read the comic, it still just hit me in a way that was so perfect. Like,
yeah,
I think this is going to be in the running for one of my favorite things this year. I loved it.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear it because I'm on episode 3 and I absolutely love it. I will say, just to what you said, they marketed this as volume 1 on the front page. So like you said, they must have filmed a volume 2 and they're holding off on it right now for some reason. Yeah.
And I remember too, when I was watching it, I was at episode 6. And I'm just like, how's this going to end? Because for some reason in my head, I'm like, it's 6 episodes.
Right.
And I think what that is Disney Plus.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, how is this going to end? And I literally stopped the show, went into the thing, noticed it said volume 1. And then I was like, oh, it's 8 episodes. Okay, this makes more sense because there's too many like hanging threads to end it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Jupiter's Legacy. It's awesome.
Yeah. And then Bad Batch came out. I didn't watch that, but what are your thoughts on that first episode?
So it's actually first 2 episodes.
First 2 episodes, okay.
But the first episode is phenomenal. They did it the same way they started Clone Wars. It's basically a movie. It's 1 hour 20 minutes. So you're going to sit down for a bit and watch this. That episode was really good. It basically takes place right at when Order 66 happens. Mm-hmm. And where the Bad Batch were when that happened. And then kind of falls down the branch of like who the main villain's going to be and where the team goes. We get a new character who is another clone like the Bad Batch, and as much as this clone's been tampered with in a way to adjust like his mental abilities or her mental abilities, I'm sorry. And it's still a kid. So it still has that like Clone Wars like kiddie vibe to it. But I really liked that first episode. It was phenomenal. And it brought back a Jedi that we know from canon. I liked who the villain's going to be, and I don't want to spoil that because it's such a cool twist. If you watch the last season of Clone Wars, then you've developed a rapport with this character. And I'm excited for it to go on. That said, episode 2 was kind of meh.
Yeah. Damn.
Like it was very much a filler episode of like, now that we know who these characters are and where they're going to be, let's put them in a weird farm planet and then like they have to fight like a not tiger thing.
Oh.
And that's it.
So that there's a reason they released it with the first episode.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed by that episode, but not every episode of a show is gonna be phenomenal. Not every episode of Clone Wars is phenomenal, far from it.
Right.
But I'm still excited for the show moving on because that first episode was so strong.
Cool. Yeah. This is pretty cool this week. Marvel released a Marvel Cinematic Universe sizzle reel narrated by the late Stan Lee. On the reel, we got a quick glance of the MCU history and some new information about the upcoming movies. Oh, boy. Most notably from the reel is Black Panther 2 has been renamed to Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Captain Marvel 2 is renamed to The Marvels, and we get our first shots of the upcoming Eternals movie. So, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, well, Wakanda Forever, biggest shock of my life.
Wait, you mean everybody's saying that after the first one came out? Like,
it's also, it is a perfect homage to Bozeman.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
that's 20 years from now, when we look back on Bozeman with all the great work he did outside of this,
right?
What's going to be the thing people talk about? Wakanda Forever.
Like, yep, exactly. Yep.
Captain Marvel 2 being the Marvels, that makes me think that the woman from WandaVision is involved in some way.
Okay.
Because that character at some point in Marvel history was Captain Marvel.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting twist there. The Eternals shots, like, We got everybody in their suits.
Yeah, right. There's not really much else than that, right?
Yeah, it basically looked like street clothes, to be honest. Like, it didn't look like anything all that fancy. So,
hey, street clothes? Wait a second, I read that book before.
Go back in the time machine.
Yep. Travis Holyfield, where are you at?
Yeah, where are you at, sir?
Yeah.
But still, I mean, Eternals, I'll watch it. It's an MCU movie.
Right. Yeah.
That shot didn't do much for me. Everybody was getting all excited about it, and I was like, it just looks like six dudes and Laura Croft standing in a room together. Like, I don't... Okay.
Oh, my God. It's... Yeah. You gotta... I mean, after the years and years of comic book news releases and trailer drops, you got to do a little bit more than that for us.
Yeah.
You know.
I'll get excited when I see some an actual trailer for this. Yeah. That's when you'll see me get excited.
We've come a long way since just revealing a Fantastic Four title with like a four in the middle of it to know that we can't really be too excited for things.
A comic book podcast I follow and that I am pseudo friends with, the guy's a huge Fantastic Four fan. I don't know if you saw that meme of the Fantastic Four logo, and then behind it comes Captain America 4.
Oh, so no. That's awesome.
It's I was trolling some people with that online.
Oh, my God.
I've been having some fun on Twitter. I got into a Twitter spat with Stephanie Phillips because her taste in Pop-Tarts are terrible.
Oh, really? Why? What is she like?
She was on Stegman and His Amazing Friends. Shout out to her for that because Ryan Stegman's amazing.
Yeah.
And she said that Wildberry Pop-Tarts are the best, and if you disagree, you're wrong. To which I tell her, Wildberry is okay, but A, Strawberry is S tier. Fuck everybody else. And listen, I always enjoy a good cookies and cream Pop-Tart. I don't care.
You're sick. Wildberry is just the best because it's blue and purple. It's the most fun of all the colors.
I'll give you that. You're right on that. But the taste, I'll take a strawberry any day. That's S tier right there.
All
right. I'm a man of classics.
Okay. Good.
Coming for you, Stephanie.
Yeah. But with that, let's take a break.
Mike, you know what I like?
What do you like? I mean, you like a lot of stuff, but it's a very vague question. What do you like?
I like to start my morning with a good cup of coffee.
You know, me too. I can't even start my... I can't talk to anybody in the morning without having caffeine, so I agree with you there.
This is true, everybody. I've gone to cons with Mike, and he literally doesn't even wake me up. He just hands me coffee.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic, especially when it's like bourbon coffee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is how Mike treats me in the morning when I go to his...
So what's up with the coffee? What's going on there?
So, I don't know if you've heard of it, but Geek Grind Coffee. Like,
okay.
They make amazing coffee, good people over there. And not only that, but they're geeks like us. So,
oh, man.
They have all these awesome flavors and all these awesome roasts. One of them is, my personal favorite, is Goblin Gulp Coffee.
Goblin Gulp.
A nice medium roast. Not too much. I'm simple man. Like, I want my nice medium to light roast with a little bit of creamer in there.
Yeah.
I'm not like you who goes all in.
Black. Yeah. But I will say, I'm more of a fan. If we're talking, I didn't know we were talking Geek Grind because I love that brand. And I will say the Labyrinth Goblin King's Elixir is amazing because, number one, I get to stare at David Bowie's beautiful face on the packaging. And number two, I mean, who doesn't want a sip of the Goblin King's Elixir, right? Come on. I mean, what more do you need, right? And I guess we have some sort of code, too, that we could use.
Yeah, so I feel like the next con we go to, I know what I'm going to wake up to, and that's some Goblin King Elixir.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, Mike,
yeah.
If you want to get that, I've got a code for you. 20% off your entire order.
What?
If you use my code, I'm going to spell it out for you.
Okay,
it's
what is
CHRIR20.
Okay.
That's CHRIR20. 20% off your entire Geek Grind coffee order.
Yeah.
So make sure you guys go there, check it out.
Geek Grind. GeekGrindCoffee.com. It's easy, it's fun, the packaging's awesome, and you get your caffeine fix.
Welcome back, everybody. This week we have for you yet another very special guest. I want everyone to welcome to the show, David Byrne. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's always cool to have someone who's creating comics, but also a co-publisher. Yeah, so that's another awesome thing, too. So I can't wait to talk to you about that today. So, David, first-timers, we always do the origin story. I know you said you have listened to the podcast, so thanks for that. That always makes us feel good. So let's hear your origin story of, you know, what got you into writing and then publishing, too. What made you want to do that?
It all started, actually, with collecting.
Okay.
My mom, actually, believe it or not, was the one who encouraged me because she read comics when she was little. So probably 5 years old, she started getting me into collecting comics, sports cards, you know, pretty much all of it. So that was the probably 87, 88. And
that's awesome.
Believe it or not, I wrote my first comic in 1991, I guess.
Okay.
Called Super Simon and Ralphie, about my cat and someone else I was in school with, their cat. They were superheroes.
Awesome.
I didn't do any comic-related writing until 2017 after that. So I did a lot of prose, and, you know, in high school we had to write poetry and things like that. But my main aspiration was screenwriting up until probably 2012 or so, when I got back into it. I wrote a novel that I really focused on and got out in 2016. And then my next story fit comics better, which, you know, I'd known comics my whole life, so that was kind of where I segued and said, well, this one's not going to be a novel. This is going to be comics because it involves superheroes.
Yeah. Okay. And, it's always better to, I feel like, to have a superhero story with illustration with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't do anything normal. So my superhero story was actually about a psychiatrist, two superheroes. The superheroes were all secondary.
Yeah. Okay.
I had the brilliant idea of making the main cover just a sofa. Because it's called The Couch, and
okay,
I think that hurt sales a little bit because it wasn't very dynamic. It was literally just a cartoony sofa.
Okay, yeah.
And was that the beginning of Scout?
No, actually, that's just a self-published, which, you know, you guys asked a little bit about what got me into publishing. It was literally doing my my novel and then my first comic on my own, and. While doing so, I figured out how much I actually liked that whole process, and I was at a small show, and another creator, he didn't do anything more like than just kablam and some on-demand printing for his book, and I, you know, I read through, and I said, are you doing more? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, I'm really kind of shy about it and everything, and it, you know, I read it, and it needed some editing, so I said, well, do you want me to, you know, take a look at this, edit for you, maybe help you put more issues out? And, you know, from there, I had a friend who wanted to publish an autobiography and a kid's book. And so within a year of publishing my own book, I had already done someone else's comic, a kid's book, and someone else's autobiography, in which all of those, I actually edited them as well. So it's like literally soup to nuts. I learned all of the things that you need to do to put a book out the hard way by screwing up on mine,
right,
and then doing it right for somebody else.
On the job training, best way.
Absolutely. Could have saved myself probably 6 months, but, you know, it's fun when you go to Barnes & Noble and you're local and you're saying, hey, do you guys do author signings? Yeah, we do. And they look it up and say, oh, you use CreateSpace through Amazon. Yeah, we're not going to do anything with you because they feel like Amazon's trying to put them out of business.
Right.
So that was when I took a step back and I actually learned to use Ingram Spark in a different, you know, distribution model. And they are through, they're not Amazon, so bookstores don't mind working with them.
I guess that's my first time hearing about that. I don't know if you knew about that, Chris. But there's, so that Amazon, the Amazon, was it Spark you said?
CreateSpace.
CreateSpace, sorry.
I don't think it exists anymore. I think they changed it to just, it's all like Kindle.
It's Kindle something now, because I played around with it for a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's almost like two different delivery systems that are more marketed to Amazon than like local bookstores.
Yep, it's interesting because when you go through Amazon, the bookstores can still purchase them,
mm-hmm.
but they prefer that you go through one of the other distributors like Ingram Spark.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I think the just quick back to the origin, the most fascinating part of it for me was your mom got you into comics.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and you know, I used to get the Wizard magazines and the Overstreet when I was little, and I showed her, because Amazing Fantasy 15 was like, it was like $1,500 or something like that.
Oh god.
And that was a, like a near mint version, and I showed it to her. I showed her the picture, and she's like, oh, I had that.
Oh my god.
Like, what? She's like, oh yeah, I used to buy all the Spider-Man comics right when they came out, but my, of course, same old story, her mom threw them out.
Oh god.
So I don't think I've told this story on the show before, but my father, like back when he was a kid, they would get comics here and there, and you go through the same Overstreet list and you start going through, starting with Amazing Fantasy and going down. He's like, oh yeah, we had all those. We just threw them out. And it just burns my soul knowing that those were in possession of my family. Yeah. And not even that I want to sell them and make millions. I would love that too. But just to know that they were in possession of the family. And it was just like, oh yeah, because it was just seen as, I read it, okay, I'm done with this. It's not something you collect. So
right, you just toss it out.
I was actually thinking about that the other day. You know, there's that whole thing, oh, if I had a time machine, I'd go back and buy all these things and stash them somewhere. I was thinking, the way they treated them back then, you could just go wait until somebody threw it in the trash and just take it, and you wouldn't even mess up the timeline. It wouldn't be missing because it would have just been in a trash heap.
Exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't disrupt, like, you know, then you like steal a couple comics and then the Nazis take over.
Exactly.
Kind of like the chain reaction, but
it'd probably be a positive reaction because there'd be less in the landfill.
Yes. We're doing our part for the planet.
Yeah. The fossil fuel, like everything's gasoline. Fossil fuels are back on track. So after The Couch, was that, what was the next project? Was that Spy Deer Man or Shady Place?
I did, well, Shady Place was first. That was my novel.
Okay, that was a novel.
Which, like, I actually sell at least a copy of that at every convention I go to, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with comics.
Mm-hmm.
That one's about a retired cop from up north who moves to a 55 and up in Florida and finds out his neighbor's the mob boss he chased his whole career. And then they basically team up to solve a murder, so it's kind of a buddy comedy. But I always have someone who comes and they're like, oh, what's this? It's a novel at a comic show.
Yeah, exactly.
And it has nothing to do with comics, because you know everybody brings someone who wants nothing to do with what's on these tables. So.
Oh, yeah.
That seems to always work out. But Steak and Spider-Man were kind of going at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then the art was just going so slow on Steak. Spider-Man kind of lapped it for the first issue, and they came out at the same time.
Okay.
But for now, my main focus is Steak, just because it's going to the direct market and doing the publishing work and also having a regular job, too. Mm-hmm. It makes it hard to focus on multiple creative aspects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. So let's talk Steak. I mean, third issue comes out next week, but I mean, what is it? Give us the lowdown here.
Okay, here's my convoluted version of
perfect. That's what we want.
A horrible pitch because I'm terrible at pitching, but it's a modern day vampire story where a teenage girl basically witnesses her best friend have his heart ripped out on national television or live streaming. And 3 years, you know, so she fast forwards 3 years, she's part of the vampire bounty hunting union and basically devoted her life to helping bring in and register vampires, because now they are a thing. And it's basically, you guys can exist, but you need to let us know who you are, kind of like a sex offender. but she teams up with an old vampire because they have accountability, you know, one human, one vampire. So either way, when they're out doing their job, no one gets too extreme on either a vampire or a human.
And I got my hands on the first issue and the that splash page of like, we've always known about vampires, and then you have like all the iterations of that. So I found the art really interesting. Can you talk about like the choice you had for that?
Yeah, I had my first artist. We actually kickstarted with a different interior artist March of last year, and he did a really scratchy black and white with just a little bit of red every once in a while. and I really liked it. When I decided I wanted to also do a spinoff at the same time to kind of let him draw the main series, have someone else draw a spinoff, so we could basically, he could have time to draw while the other person drew something, and we could still have releases going and stay kind of in the public's mind. The idea was to basically do that black and white with color splashes. And when Francesca took over, you've seen in the issue one, she does way more than just black and white with red here and there for blood.
Right.
She actually tries to tie in the emotion of the scene and things like that. She did the spinoff first for me, just the one issue of it. Mm-hmm. And the first page she turned in, it's set in the 18th century, and they're in a tavern, and it's all black and white, except there's candles like everywhere, just with this nice tiny flames. Mm-hmm. And then it just gets better throughout the entire issue. So,
oh, wow.
I know color sells better, but I haven't had a single person complain about the way we chose to go with this. I think it just fits the tone of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the black and white for sure works. And yeah, I think the tone, it definitely does set the tone. And it's like, I mean, you start the issue, you know, no spoilers really. I mean, you said it in the pitch, but you started off with, you know, vampires have been revealed to the world. Right. So, and then we kind of go from there. But the black and white does add something to it, I think. I don't think it really takes away from the story. I also like the idea of, like, you don't have square panels everywhere, you know? The page layouts or the setups for each page, I like the way it's structured like that. I think that fits the story as well.
Yeah, that's a mix between me and Francesca.
Okay.
So I do pretty well laid out pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like page one, obviously that's a one page splash. But if you have seven panels, I'll give kind of direction on the size of the panels, but then tell her if she can think of something better, go for it. And obviously don't be bound by rigid boundaries, because she has things coming out of panels. You know, she has very few of the panels are just straight edge. There are a couple of pages where, you know, we did that just because it fits what's happening with the story on that. You know, if we're showing the reflection of a video through someone's phone, it does make more sense to do it more rigid with the, you know, the squared off panels. But if it's an emotional fight scene, you don't need straight edges. It actually helps build on the action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always nice when artists take the time to really put some thought and appreciation into their panel layouts. I mean, we can go with the straight 9-panel grid or 4-panel grid or whatever, but I always find that I'm more drawn in when we play around with those panels and even like the borders and how they're laid out and everything. So it's nice to see that that both of you took some time to appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, as far as vampires go, what made you want to do a vampire story? Is that just something you've always been a fan of? Or
yeah, pretty much. I mean, anytime, even if it's like a bad vampire story on, you know, you see on cable or whatever, you're
like,
I
Twilight?
Stop and watch it. I watched the first one just out of what I considered market research back at the time.
Yep.
And then I got, outside of the sparkly vampire thing, which really threw me for a loop, I was like, okay, this just kind of is. I don't love it or hate it, that one. But then I got stuck watching the second one on a plane, and there's like a 15-minute scene where she's staring out a window, and I was like, what is happening with this?
Yeah.
I had to turn it off. I was like, I'm just going to watch nothing instead of
Right. It's funny you brought that up, because like recently I'm trying to marathon them, and I got to the second one. I had to take a break because it's just a whole lot, like, I like vampires and vampire movies, and there wasn't a whole lot of that. I think that was my biggest problem. But you kind of just, it seems like you bring all of it together, though, of, you know, all the different genre vampire movies, or not genres, but iterations, I guess, right? You're trying to touch on all of that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's, you don't ignore what preceded you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we basically acknowledge it.
Yep.
The biggest difference is in our story, they're not supernatural. They're just a step in evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So they've just been smart enough to try to hide themselves for thousands of years.
Right.
And to me, I don't recall any stories where they were actually, you know, just a step in evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I even try to include some of the science along with it,
right,
the way.
Yeah.
Without beating you over the head with it, which, you know, I may like do a couple of pages of like a textbook or something that we slide mm-hmm. in the back of some issues in the future. But for now, it's just going to be revealed as we go, the little nuances of vampire life.
Okay.
Awesome.
You're not going for like the alien worms from space, like Strain or anything like that.
you spoiler, man.
No. Oh, sorry. But I thought it was interesting because, like, you know, and that's how the first issue really gets you is, okay, you've established there's, you know, there's vampires, but they're treated more like mutants, like you said, like a step in the evolution, but also that there's a spotlight on them. Like, you know, the world is known about vampires through movies and TV and books and stuff, but now it's like, oh, crap, they're real things. And from what we've known in the media, we should be terrified of them, right? Mm-hmm. They're all bad. Is that kind of the sense you're... Is every vampire going to be bad in this book, or is there going to, like, some that toe the line, or...
I think they're kind of all over the place.
Okay.
You know, you've got the good, the bad, the... I'm not going to say the ugly.
I was waiting for it.
You've got the ones who wanted to, you know, basically be known for centuries. You've got the ones who are happy just hiding. In issue 3, we do make the comparison. This is not a huge spoiler that one of the vampires, he's black, so he's basically had a long time in America where it took him a while just to get to the point where he didn't feel like he was being oppressed for the color of his skin. Then all of a sudden vampires come out and now it's right back. He's almost feels like he's back to square one where now, because he's a vampire, people hate him.
Yeah. Wow. That sucks. Wow. Yeah. It's like, intended. Oh, I just, yeah, for sure. Fun intended. You know, I spent hundreds of years trying to get back to, you know, normal, like being treated like a normal person. And now here I am again. That's an interesting take. And the spinoffs associated with it, too. I know you did that for one of the characters. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so Jessamy is actually Angel or Stake's partner in mm-hmm. the main series. So she's... I haven't given her an actual age, but she's basically thousands of years old.
Okay.
So she has a lot of written history that we can go through and just tell interesting stories. Mm-hmm. And we did a spinoff set in the 18th century where she's in England, and over in the New World, there are rumors of monsters that are eating the slaves on the plantation. So this story travels across the Atlantic to where she works, and they send her to the New World to go track it down and see what's going on. Because basically, if they're hearing it there, people are hearing it in the colonies, and they want to squash it as quickly as they can.
So do you see doing a lot more with this series, or do you have a confined, like, 4, 8, so on and so forth issues that you want to do?
I have 4 arcs planned for the main series
mm-hmm.
That would basically tell the story of what's going on specifically. And then, I mean, it's a vampire story, so literally we could just go on forever. I've got almost infinite spinoffs we can do.
Okay.
As long as it makes sense to do it, I'll keep doing it. I know Francesca, the artist, she's committed. She loves the series, so she wants to be around as long as possible. And I told her if we finish this one, we'll find something else to work on too. But it's going to be a long time before this one's done.
Awesome. Well, that's really cool to hear.
So on the publishing side, what else has Scout got going on right now?
Oh, we've got a lot going on. So this time last year, as you know, everybody was full swing in the pandemic. We were just suffering. Diamond had shut down, mm-hmm. and we launched a retailer direct program because we were actually able to still. We never stopped printing during the pandemic. Our print company is like 5 miles from our headquarters, and they were deemed essential, so they never had to shut down or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the shops that were open and the ones that were, you know, just doing the online sales and everything, we made it where they could just order directly from us. And we've continued to do that for the last, I guess we're right at a year, because I think we did our first one in May for a June delivery.
Okay.
And it's been excellent to supplement our diamond orders with a retailer direct. And then in, I guess we have our first orders are going out now. We're the first non-DC company on Lunar.
Mm.
So we're now on FOC. When stores go to order their DC books, the Scout books are mixed in with them.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Cool.
And on top of that, we've just done, we've signed a deal with Universal, which is a Canadian distributor.
Oh, that's awesome.
So plus we do subscription boxes every month. So any of our new titles, and if we didn't have 12 that month, we actually will put in a number one of an older series to kind of give somebody an opportunity to start something and maybe pick up a series they missed down the line.
That's a really cool idea.
And you guys did Stabbity Bunny, right?
Yes, that was the first real hit for Scout.
Okay,
because I wanted to shout this out too, because I remember during the throes of the pandemic when Diamond was shut down, you guys also did a program where if you ordered through the website and put the name of your local shop, you sent kicked some of that back to the shop. I actually bought a few of your stuff that way and kicked it back to my local shop. So big shout out there, because when everybody else was kind of scattering to figure out what's going on, you guys were still supporting the local shops.
Yeah,
I know it ended up being thousands of dollars that we paid out to shops, which was fantastic, because you know, we charged our regular price and we gave half of it to the shop.
That's so awesome. And then, you know, you guys are doing this while the big two are kind of like, well, we're just going to not, you know, get books to you guys right now.
Oh, they said pencils down.
Yeah, right. We're just going to stop everything. So that's actually, I mean, what a time for you guys to get up and running and then have such, you know, awesome success. So really glad to hear that you guys are doing well. So, and yeah, just to get back to Steak, when is that next issue coming out? Next week, right? Next Wednesday?
Yep, the 12th.
Okay. And you can just tell your local comic shop to order those, just, you know, like normal comics, right?
Oh yeah, we're in Diamond, now Lunar. Basically, the Tuesday night before books go on sale, if you need, you can come to our website. If you don't have a local comic shop, we put them up there, that everything will be covered. We, if you pay attention, we constantly have sales. We just had a 50% off flash sale last week.
Oh, damn. I didn't see that one. I would have ordered a lot.
There were a lot of orders. I get an email every time someone orders something.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so you just had your inbox filled.
Oh, yeah. And my phone buzzes. It gets crazy.
And as far as digital goes, are all your titles plan to be digital as well, or how does that work for you guys?
Yeah, we do everything digital on our website. So we usually knock a dollar off the cover price, or trades, it's usually even more than that. But we're working on getting everything on Comixology. We didn't go the traditional route of a lot of smaller publishers do, which is, you know, you just go in the back page and you submit and upload.
Right.
We wanted to get in the searchable by publisher.
So we've
been working with them for a few months just to try to get that in. Once we've got everything sorted out, we'll be uploading a lot of titles.
Okay.
But they also want a lot of metadata and things like that. So it's a gathering process. So we've been a little behind. That's probably where we've, as a company, failed the most, is getting a better digital presence.
Okay.
But, you know, we got on Madefire, and then it looks like Madefire is having some financial issues. So that platform might not be around much longer, but we hope it comes back, because it's really cool. They actually do motion comics too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never checked those out.
And anyone that's going to the local comic shops to pick up issue 3, are there still copies of 1 and 2 available for them to order?
On our website, there are. And there's also a second print of number 1. Should be hitting the 19th, I think.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah, so that's really cool, and to see you guys doing well. And like you said about the digital thing, that's something I've... I mean, I... about a couple years ago, I went all digital. And so for me, for when I want to look up indie publishers like you or like Ahoy Comics on Comixology, that's what I'll do. I'll type in a publisher name and then look for all the titles that they got going on, like just stuff I haven't, you know, heard about or stuff I missed previously. So that'll be huge for you guys, I think, to get that up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other interesting thing we're doing is to kind of tap into the collector's market. We're doing an offshoot company called Comic Tags.
Oh.
Where basically it's going to be one of the nicer covers from a particular title.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be like a trading card. It's the size of a credit card, but it has a scratch-off code on the back, and you can download the trade paperback of the book. So okay. For $6.99, you'll get a collectible card and basically a digital download if you want. So
that's really cool.
Then with the collector's market, we figure some people will just leave them unscratched, so you'll have the collector's version too.
Yeah.
That's an awesome idea, especially I could see that being really big at cons as well. People being like, well, I'm only digital only. Well, I got this for you.
Yeah.
That, yeah, and the price is competitive with the actually paying for, you know, the digital version when you actually now you'll get something tangible. And right now it's just Scout, but we're actually, it's like I said, it's kind of an offshoot company, so we are going to be pursuing other publishers. So, you know, someday maybe you'll see a Marvel or DC comic tag.
yeah, probably. I kind of hate you for doing that though, because like I had gotten into collecting trading cards after the comics because I'm like, I need to collect something. Then I was like, I don't really have room for those. But now you've taken collectible cards and mixed them with digital comics. So it's like, well, here, I got to make space for this.
Oh, but you can put them all in a shoebox. Isn't that what you're
supposed
to do?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. I was like, oh, cards are a lot easier to collect because I can put them in a binder. Then it was like, wow, these binders are taking up a lot of space.
So you bought a lot of cards.
Yeah, then I bought a lot of cards. Awesome. Well, David, yeah, thanks so much, man. Where, if we want, obviously we can send everybody to scoutcomics.com or is it scout.com?
Yep. Scoutcomics.com.
Yep. And if they want to follow you and all the cool stuff you're doing, where can we send them?
I have a website, davidabyrne.com.
Okay.
I've got basically Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere you want to look for me. It's DAB282. So, I know it's real creative and doesn't even make sense because the numbers mean nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was my email address from 27 years ago or something like that.
Oh, okay. So okay.
I never changed it.
Yeah. We've had some weird emails or like, you know, ads on Twitter. And sometimes the stories are just wild. Why, you know, how they get there. But yeah, we won't hold you to it.
Yeah. Awesome. I wish mine was more interesting, but it's a friend set up my AOL Instant Messenger of all things.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And because DAB12 was what I used for everything and it was taken, he picked numbers. And then I come to find out that it's the, because my birthday is March 82.
Okay.
So, like, this doesn't even line up with, you know, my birthday or anything.
Right, right.
It was the girl he liked. It was her. It matched her screen name was like Swimmer282 or something.
Oh, so boy.
He did that. I'm like, all right, so now she's going to think I like her or something.
Yeah, right, right. That's awesome. You used to do stuff like that on AIM, though. That's really funny.
Those are the good old days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everybody, I'll have the links to David's website and a link to where you could purchase issue 3 right through Scout in the comment section, the show notes down below. So make sure to check those out. Dave, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks.
It was great. The book's awesome. And best of luck moving forward with it.
Thanks, guys.
And we're back.
Awesome. So everybody, check it out. Stake number 3 comes out
this coming Wednesday.
Yeah.
So when you go to pick up your new comics, there it is, waiting for you to order.
Buy it. And then go to Scout Comics and buy all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, their digital stuff, like, it's the way it should be. You know, $1 off, you go digitally, you get the PDF straight through them. It's awesome. And they have some good books. I mean, we've interviewed so many other people in the past. You guys know.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, you should know by now if you don't. And with that, let's jump into the comic news, or lack thereof, again.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a sad one. Yeah. Note.
Yeah, this is really sad. Comic book artist John Paul Leon has passed away at the age 49, way too young, after a 14-year-long battle with cancer. He wasn't a household name. He should have been because of the amount of stuff he's worked on. Earth X, Batman, Creature of the Night, and the penciler behind the first appearance of Static Shock, Static One, number one. This guy was, I mean, he walked between worlds, right? He was in Marvel and he was in DC and he was there at the dawn of Static Shock. Like, amazing work.
Yeah, and, you know, I made jokes in the past about Static Shock, but it sucks that he won't be there for the movie that they're making.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, he's basically one of the co-creators of that character, and he's just not there. So that sucks, but, dude... Everybody, go check out EarthX. EarthX is one of my favorite Marvel events ever. Designs by Alex Ross, Kurt Busiek's the writer. It's just a fantastic story. And then Creature of the Night, like that's going to be on top of everybody's Batman list forever. Like, at least a top 10 story. Yep, so
it's a great one.
The dude's done work, and he's well loved in the industry.
Oh, for sure.
If you were on Twitter the day he passed, but everybody was talking about him.
And really sad.
It sucks. It sucks. Like you said, 49 and 14 years with fucking cancer.
Yeah.
And to put that in context, he's not, when he developed cancer, he's not much older than I am right now.
Right. So all I can say is fuck cancer.
Seriously.
Moral of the story.
We don't take many political stances on this show.
But that's one of them, damn it.
But one I can stand behind firmly, and if you disagree with me, fuck you, is fuck cancer.
Yeah.
But to his family, best wishes, and everybody go check out his work, because he did some amazing work.
Yeah, and that's, you know, death is always something hard to deal with, but as an artist and a writer, I mean, these guys are immortalized through that, right? So...
Yeah, and like really I said, he's a part of some of the best work in the industry. So EarthX will remember forever, Creature of Night will remember forever, and Static Shock's about to be a $500 million movie. So,
yep, I agree. With that, let's talk about the comics we read this week.
Yeah, boy.
I didn't even get to all of them. I gotta apologize to Cullen Bunn because his book is sitting in my Comixology app. Eden. I have Eden ready on the bench. I'll read it for next week. But I'll start with Batman 108. This is Tinian and Jimenez. I will say I didn't even read the Ghost Maker story in the back of it. I just had no interest. Basically, Batman goes undercover and meets the person behind the movement going on. Her name is Miracle Molly. She makes tech enhancements for all the people that are, like, you know, causing all the crime and issues in Gotham. Basically all these people that are part of the collective I can't remember what their name is. They get their brains wiped. So they don't remember the past, and she likes it that way. She, like, has this talk, and she knows Batman. She knows it's Batman, like, 'cause he's undercover, but, like, she takes him on this, like floating platform ride, and he isn't even fazed by it. And she's like, I know you're Batman. He's like, why? He's like, because I took you on this floating platform and you didn't even flinch. And he's like, oh yeah. But the bigger story here is the magistrate is finally making its presence in Gotham, and they start with the cop that was attacked at the Joker gassing at Arkham Asylum. And he's lost his legs, like he can't walk, he's paralyzed. So magistrate says, we could basically give you an enhancement and make you walk again if you'll be our if you'll be our new, like, you know, magistrate 01 or whatever the 01 dude they call him. But he's gonna be the first new warrior in the line of the magistrates, and that's who kind of what we saw in the Futures wasn't Futures End or the whatever the hell that was, but
Future State.
Future State, yeah. So he's pretty much brainwashed. He's like, I don't care what you do to me, and it's going to be really painful. I don't care. I want to walk again. So they're pretty much got him brainwashed to where they're like, okay, we're just going to, you know, kill all the vigilantes in Gotham. It was okay. Cry.
Such a good description, followed by, yeah. It was okay.
It was okay. I want to make sure everybody knows what's going on. Crime Syndicate number 3, Andy Schmidt, and this is McGowan, and then a side story by Schmidt and Hitch, Brian Hitch on the art. So the Crime Syndicate beats Starro in this issue, thanks to Power Woman, and they finally become a team. Lex Luthor tries to explain to all of them that they're like, you killed all of the civilians while you're fighting Starro, and Ultraman's like, yeah, but we saved the day. It's like, they don't understand, like, they're just like, shut up, Lex, like, yeah, we killed a bunch of people, but who gives a shit? And then we find the origins of Donna in the second story, and Donna Troy, and how she became Power Woman, and they do the whole Steve Trevor story, but it's twisted to where Steve Trevor comes to the island and he takes her hostage and tries to tell the Amazons, like, I will slit her throat unless you give me warriors to go fight in America with. And they're like, they're basically like, yeah, slit her throat, we don't care. And he's like, what? And then she turns around and stabs him and kills him. And she's like, I will be, you know, taken hostage by no man. And they're pretty much like, they pretty much tell her, like, you know, you let your emotions get the best of you, and she's like, well, that'll never happen again. So it was a pretty crazy origin where it's like, oh, wow, Steve Trevor just got, like, stabbed to death.
I love the twist with Starro in this, too, where yeah. It's like, I'm not trying to take over. Like, I just, the fucking Owens, they suck, and they tried to kill us.
Yeah, right. And they're like, oh, we don't care. He's like, now you want us to feel bad?
Crime Syndicate's awesome.
Yeah, Crime Syndicate's so good. Swamp Thing number 3, this is Ram V and Mike Perkins on the art. We know that Levi is the new champion of the Green, and his friend Jennifer is like, well, let me give you an MRI because you're having all these crazy nightmares, you don't know what the hell's going on. Basically, while he's going under the MRI, he creates, like, you know, all these, like, all this foliage in the room, and it gets a hold of his friend Jennifer, and she goes into the Green with him. So they're both in the Green, like, in a trance state. And it's a whole different world, and he meets two different poison ivies. There's poison ivy, and then there's regular ivy. And regular ivy is kind of leading him around the Green, showing him everything. And poison ivy shows up. They get in a fight. And then he ends up meeting Alec Holland. Alec Holland's down there, the original Swamp Thing. And he pretty much says to him, like, I need to explain everything to you before it's, you know, while we have the time. But also your friend Jennifer is in trouble. Someone by the name of Woodrue finds her because he's trapped in the Green as well. So if anybody knows, you know, Woodrue's is the Swamp Thing's, like, arch nemesis. So we'll see what happens there. But hopefully we get a little more exposition on what's going on from Alec Holland. It's cool to see him and kind of passing the torch. Suicide Squad 3, number 3, with Thompson and Panseca on the art. The whole premise of this issue is they need to get a speedster on the team. So they go for Bolt, who's part of the Teen Titans. And the side story here is everybody's kind of creeped out by Superboy because they're like, well, why is he helping out Amanda Waller? And he seems like a psycho, which he kind of is. They try to catch the speedster. He gets away. She gets away to the Titans Tower. And then they're like, well, what do we do now? Well, Red X shows up at the end and is like, hey, I know how to get into Titan's Tower and defeat the Titans, so let me help you out. I mean, it is Red X, so... I was getting, like, you know, original cartoon Teen Titans vibes, which was awesome.
Yeah. Which is also why they brought Red X into the DC Universe.
Yeah. And pretty much, I mean, Suicide Squad's awesome, and I really like, that they have Peacemaker involved, and he's kind of like the butt of the jokes. Like, nobody takes him seriously, but he's actually, like, really good at his job. So it's just, it's like a funny joke that's going on. And then I caught up on Wrong Earth, Night and Day, issues 3 and 4. This is Tom Pear and Jamal Eagle on the art. Basically, there's another version of their arch villain, number 1, and he captures Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man. but he pretty much isn't the mastermind behind everything. They get free and fight, and Stinger shows up. Well, Stinger thinks that Dragonfly Man is the original Dragonfly in a new suit, because that's what he tells him, but it's not really the original Dragonfly. So he's kind of confused on which one's which, because this is the sidekick, the Robin, basically, from Earth Alpha, and the guy from Earth Omega is tricking him. These guys get in a fight over who gets to keep Stinger and who really cares about him. And then while they're fighting, Man Dragonfly shows up, a third one, and he's got like a futuristic suit, almost like Batman Beyond style. That's and fantastic. He splits them up and is basically like, there's more Earths is what we find out in this issue, which is awesome. So I can't wait to figure that out. Also, Lady Dragonfly Man is looking for Dragonfly Man, but she realizes like Stinger has disappeared and she doesn't. Yeah, there's a Lady Dragonfly Man.
Do they call her Lady Dragonfly Man?
Oh yeah, they do.
That's fantastic.
Tom Pear is a genius. And also what they have her do is she's basically like from the Dark Knight universe, Earth Omega, but she's on the Batman 66 universe. So instead of being like you know, the Earth Alpha is very happy and go lucky like the Batman 66 universe, but also it's very sexist, because that's like, that's, they basically embodied like the 1940s. Yeah. And so like they say a lot of shit like, oh, but you're not smart enough to do that on your own, and all this crazy and like you know, like casual like sexual harassment and stuff like that. So it's like the way he wrote that universe and how you're like, oh, this is kind of grimy and creepy, like it's really messed up. But yeah, that's what I read this week. I also read ENIAC number 2, which is from Bad Idea Comics, that you can only pick up in comic shops. It's a solid issue. It's a really good story. Basically, you know, AI has been controlling the U.S. and our international relations for the past so many years and is ready to destroy the Earth. So it's a really good story. Check it out. And that's all I had.
So I read all of Legends of the Dark Knight. That's numbers 1 through 6. That Derek Robertson did, and I'll say I really liked it. I thought the ending was a little weird, but all in all, I thought it was a good, solid Batman story. And I like the Riddler and having his girlfriend and then kind of tricking Batman at the end there, that he did. I thought it was a solid series, and I like Derek's Batman. Yeah, like, the way he draws Batman. I really like the way he draws Joker, though.
Yeah.
His Joker is like, it's got this classic vibe to it, but it's his own at the same time. I love it.
What number was that you read?
I read all 6.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I forgot I did read this week. I read the last one with Quiz.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good story.
And I think, you told me the next issue is going to be Stephanie, right?
Yeah, Stephanie Phillips is taking over. Yep.
After that, I read The Good Asian, number 1. This is from Image Comics. This is a crime noir story taking place in the late 30s, so like right before World War II. Mm. And all in all, I really liked it. It's about this this Asian detective whose entire job is basically, he's kind of just a puppet of the police department, where they send him in to kind of snitch on other Asian people. So it's dealing with these weird racial stereotypes and racial issues of the 30s and 40s, centered around Asians. And the writer, I wish I could remember his name, but I know that he himself is also Asian. And my only gripe about the whole issue, and it's necessary to get into the story, but it's done kind of clunky. So I found it interesting, but the way it flows in the comic didn't do what it wanted to do. Okay. Was they tell you a history of Asian immigration into America going back to like the mid 1800s, where there was like real and true immigration bans on a lot of Asian countries, specifically China, and how they had to go through these kind of camps. And this is all prior to World War II, so we're not talking about Japanese concentration camps. They had to go in these camps to kind of prove that they were citizens. And it's drawing a fine like line, kind of parallel line to what we're dealing with today with the Mexican border.
Yeah.
Not to get too much into it, but I liked how he laid it out and that these are the facts, these are what happened, and that kind of sets us up to where we meet our character in one of these camps and he's able to leave because he's kind of a snitch and he's needed by the cops. But I thought he could have handled it a little bit better because it's laid out very much like bullet point facts instead of kind of flowing into the story.
Right.
That said, I like the issue altogether and I want to see where it goes from here. Because it's definitely something unique and it's introducing things I never known.
Basically, Chris's gripe with the story is I don't want to see the facts presented as facts. I want it as a story. It's too much like a textbook, damn it.
The irony is I have these critiques of it, and you're right. Everything you said is correct. But then after the fact, I went online and I looked at textbook facts about what happened because I wanted to learn more about it.
Yeah.
But in terms of like a story, it just didn't flow
very well. Right. No, I get what you're saying.
And then I got Marjorie Finnegan, Temporal Criminal, number one.
Nice.
This is from AWA Upshot Comics, and this is a new Garth Ennis book.
Cool.
Mike picked this up.
Okay.
So we got this character, Mallory, or I keep calling her Mallory, Marjorie, who goes back in time and steals things. And it's funny because he explains his how she doesn't just like fuck up the timeline by giving her this device that she refers to as the Unfucker.
Oh, awesome.
And basically, like, whenever you take something out of time, it just replaces it and fixes the time stream.
Oh, that's
nice. That's basically Garth's way of being like, I don't want to deal with this shit. I just want to tell a fun story.
Right.
And we have a story of her in ancient Egypt, and she steals from one of the pyramids. And then she goes back to her place, like, in the time stream.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a parallel story of this other woman who was kind of a time police officer. And she goes back and finds, like, a Nazi selling artillery cannons to these people back in, like, Viking times to shoot down Viking ships. And she ends up arresting him. And then there's a big twist at the end where we find out they're actually sisters. If you like the boys and you like Garth's writing, I think it flows right in with that stuff. Like, it's obviously Garth.
Yeah.
The dialogue reminds me so much of the boys. And just how people talk and interact with each other. Obviously no superheroes, but I highly recommend it. And it's a 8-issue miniseries, so
nice.
I'll save that for last. Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters Alpha number one. This is setting up a 4-month 32-issue crossover event through all the Star Wars books.
Oh god.
Which is basically setting up, like, Boba Fett has Han Solo in Carbonite, and now all the bounty hunters know that he has him. And the payoff is so good that they all want to fight Boba Fett to get him.
Nice.
So in this, Boba finds out that, like, the Carbonite's slowly killing Han, so he has to go to a friend of his to save him. And they go to this planet, and his friend's like, well, you gotta pay me. He doesn't have the money, so long story short, he has to go into a coliseum to fight for the money. And this is where you get, it's been all over the internet, but they basically spray paint Boba Fett to be all black so that nobody knows it's Boba Fett. And so this whole issue is him like fighting in the coliseum, which is pretty badass because it's just Boba Fett killing people page after page.
That's awesome.
And then the end of the book, we kind of set up that somebody has gone and killed this friend of Boba's and stolen Han.
Oh.
So it looks like, you know, somebody came and found him, and that's going to be the story, is Boba Fett has to get Han back, because obviously we know that he ends up giving him to Jabba in the end.
Right.
But it was pretty good. It's Charles Soule writing it, and I think Charles Soule is one of the best Star Wars writers we have right now.
Yep.
And Steve McNiven is doing the art, and his art is phenomenal.
Awesome.
So if you're a big Star Wars fan, check it out. And then my book of the week, Heroes Reborn, number one, which, Mike, came with trading cards.
Oh, damn.
My trading cards, everybody.
Oh, wow.
Which I now have a, as a quick aside, I now have a trading card that says Captain America, super villain.
Wow. Okay. That makes no sense.
So the whole premise here is that Blade has kind of awoken to this world, and he knows our Marvel, our 616, and he's trying to figure out, like, what the fuck happened. Because nobody knows who Captain America is. Thor is a drunk that doesn't save people.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Stark never had his heart fixed and or blown up, and is still like selling guns and ammunition to people. All we have is this Squadron Supreme.
Yeah.
In the first part of it, we get Juggernaut. Where Juggernaut, or I'm sorry, where Doom pulls out the Juggernaut emblem and turns into Juggernaut and fights Hyperion. We get Coulson as the president of the United States in this.
Okay.
And it's basically Blade like trying to figure out what's going on. And what he ends up finding out was that somebody went back in time and changed one important detail. And that was they never thawed out Cap. So Cap's still in the ice.
Oh, interesting.
And that's kind of where we leave the issue off, is he ends up finding him in the ice. I really loved it. It's a cool kind of alternate universe story, time story. And it was just fun, you know, putting characters in different places. It's a good excuse for Marvel to do the Justice League. So I really liked it, and I can't wait for the next issue. And next week I get 3 issues of it. So
damn. Awesome. Yeah, I should probably check it out.
And that should be everything I had. So, Mike, where can people find you on that internet?
If I'm at Fortress Ricker on Twitter, where can they find you and or the show?
Well, you can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter, and they can find the show at FortressComics_ on Twitter, or at FortressComicNews.com, where everything we do is right there on that handy-dandy website. Remember, everybody, if you were listening to us, give us a review on whatever podcatcher you use, 5 stars in the iTunes. And if you are watching this video, to thumb up the video, subscribe to the channel, comment down below. Let us know what you think. And yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you here next week.
Goodbye.